Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com. On behalf of our family of hosts, staff, and the millions of listeners who have tuned in since 2009, we want to wish you happy holidays and ask for your support as we launch our daily in-house news coverage. Please consider making us a part of your end-of-year giving in 2013. Your membership donation is tax-deductible and the best way to show you believe in our work and the importance of a free, food-focused media resource. Consider donating today at heritageradionetwork.org by clicking the Donate button. Thanks for your support and enjoy the show.
You're listening to Let's Get Real on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Wow, December? Where did you come from? Where did the pretty autumn leaves go? Where did the hot apple cider and the dry, cool air go? It was just Halloween, and I was just raging against the pumpkin spice flavoring machine. And now, snow. Snow. And fresh-cut pine trees and twinkly lights and Mariah Carey screaming at me about what she wants for Christmas in every store and tourists wearing pink sequined Uggs getting lost on their way to the 9/11 memorial after watching the Radio City Christmas Spectacular in 3D and candy cane-flavored marshmallow peeps and eggnog-flavored Oreos and all the other little things that add up to the holidays with a capital H and which really wouldn't be complete without the yearly family viewing of my family's favorite holiday classic, the one we wait all year to see and then watch again and again, the American masterpiece, Sandra Lee, from an old episode of her show, making her beautiful, stunning, delicious classic Kwanzaa cake. Canned chocolate frosting, corn nuts, cake mix, and all. Because nothing says the holidays, with a capital H, more than a skinny blonde shiksa dumping canned pie filling into the center of a bundt cake from a mix than good old Sandy, the almost first lady of New York State, if Andy Cuomo would just marry her already and make her legit. We watch that video every Christmas Eve as we gather around the warm, crackling Apple TV box with family and friends eating Vietnamese food since we're Jews and everything. If you haven't seen it yet, cancel those holiday plans right now and get Googling. And since we're getting near the end of the year, and I'm taking some time this month to finish up a few things here around the fallout shelter, a few minor repairs and alterations that I had to put off for a while as I've been very busy, you know, consulting. And so I'm trying to use up some of the old leftover stuff that may have gotten left behind, some of the old leftover ideas that may have gotten shoved to the back of the fridge while we just habitually grab for the fresher stuff up front, and maybe also revisiting a few items that either never made it into shows or got rushed through or glossed over too quickly because I ran out of time in a particular episode. So this week's show, think of this week's show as a last meal of Thanksgiving leftovers, which by now you really shouldn't be eating, unless you really don't want to see 2014, except for maybe some rapidly fermenting year-old cranberry sauce, which I actually still have leftover from last year. But now I'm calling it cranberry kimchi, and I'll be selling it online and at the Brooklyn Flea this spring, because that's how you use up leftovers. You repurpose them. Like old plumbing fixtures made into lamps or old typewriter keys made into earrings and then sold at the Brooklyn Flea. You know, reuse, repurpose, recycle. Now, I grew up in a house where it seemed as if we ate leftovers every night. I don't really remember much new food. Just constant leftovers, like the hand-me-down clothes and toys from older cousins and neighbors that I reluctantly inherited. My memories of meals are heavily glazed with the rewarmed flavor of yesterday's dinners. But I'm okay with leftovers now because, in fact, I'm very good at making entire meals out of little bits and bobs and scraps of stuff. And those meals are almost always delicious. That's, I think, where my true genius as a chef lies, in making delicious things out of leftover things. I mean, anybody can cook from a full pantry or a full walk-in of brand new pristine product, right? But not everybody can look at a fridge full of random scraps of shit and turn it into something great. Back when I was teaching at the culinary school, I would scavenge all week. I would scavenge up all kinds of leftover stuff, like half onions or pieces of eggplant or lamb scraps, stray herb sprigs, little pieces of cheese. All the stuff that in a restaurant kitchen would have never, ever been thrown out, but at the incredibly wasteful institution where I spent the last 15 years would be tossed right out into the garbage without a second thought. And it made me really sick to see that. So I usually filled my bags up with perfectly usable stuff and took it home and made awesome meals out of it all. For the first few months this spring after leaving that job, it took me a while to realize that I'd actually have to go out and buy food every week or so. It's the only thing I miss about that place, the leftovers. Now, the art of using leftovers is a dying one, like the art of making a good mixtape or of writing a letter. Relics of another, more thrifty, more manual, less digital era. People don't eat leftovers anymore or know how to turn them into other things, because if you're eating an all-foodiness diet, there's no real food there to begin with. Everything is individually portioned and packaged and bottled and wrapped and ready to be eaten or popped into the microwave. I mean, nobody looks in the fridge at 5 o'clock on a Wednesday night and says, huh, what can we make tonight from 2 half-eaten power bars, a half bottle of vitamin water, and a red velvet-flavored yogurt? Oh, screw it. Let's just call Domino's. I look at the fridge and see it half full of opportunity for creativeness, inventiveness, thrifty deliciousness. The foodiness monster looks at the fridge and sees it half empty, but full of opportunity for evil mischief. Because you can't eat leftovers if you're not eating food. Now, my friend and former colleague, Mike Schwartz, who's a chef and food entrepreneur and the owner of Bao Kombucha, which is the only brand of kombucha you should be drinking, when he was a young lad, teenager, worked in the kitchen of his Jewish summer sleepaway camp. He assisted the camp chef, and that's where and when he decided that he, too, wanted to become a chef. And that's where he learned the ways of the leftover. Now, he told me a great story once about learning the clever, thrifty ways that chefs use up leftovers, especially in institutional settings like camp kitchens. You're on a very tight budget. You don't necessarily have daily deliveries. You have to work with what you have. Now, one summer day, it was a camper's birthday, a young girl's birthday, and her parents had either ordered or sent or had delivered a typical 1970s birthday cake for her, complete with white buttercream made from Crisco, not butter, pink roses and writing, and a big plastic ballerina doll stuck in the middle of the cake. Now, the cake was served to all the campers that night, and then the remaining uneaten cake was put in the camp kitchen's walk-in refrigerator to be served again. Now, the next day was Friday, and this being a Jewish summer camp, Friday marked the beginning of Shabbat, the Sabbath, and therefore the baking of challah and Shabbat dinner dessert treats. This was when the chef did his baking. Now, this particular chef was known for his babka. Now, if you're not familiar with babka, because you're not a Seinfeld watcher, you're going to have to look it up. But babka is basically like brioche dough, but it gets rolled up with chocolate and nuts and baked, and it's sort of somewhere in between bread and cake. But unlike brioche, babka isn't made with butter, because it's usually served in kosher kitchens or in kosher homes. And because this was a kosher camp, and the babka would have been served as a dessert with a meat meal, it had to be made with non-dairy shortening. You can't serve a cake made with butter after or with a meal made from meat. I know, it's complicated. Just Google it for a better description. So, this chef, being thrifty, set out to begin mixing the ingredients for the babka dough in the giant 80-quart Hobart mixer Which, if you can't imagine what that is, think of it like this. The 80-quart Hobart mixer is like the equivalent of the Mack truck of mixers to the smart car-sized home KitchenAid mixer. You get the image? You can sit inside the bowl of it. It's so big. So he's pouring in his flour and his sugar and his eggs and his shortening, remember, no butter, and vanilla and all his other babka ingredients. And then he sends young Mr. Schwartz to the walk-in for the leftover birthday cake. And Mike obediently but perplexedly fetches the remaining cake and hands it to the chef. The chef pulls out the plastic ballerina, hands it to Mike, and dumps the entire remaining birthday cake, pink roses and all, into the revolving mixer paddle, where it is quickly consumed into the babka dough mixture. Mike was so impressed by this easy, instinctive way of doing and thinking that he vowed at that moment he, too, would one day be a chef and use up his leftovers in a similar, honorable, and thrifty way. So in keeping with my commitment to using up leftovers, but also my revulsion at all things flavored like other things, I'm awarding the chef at Camp Jews in the Woods, or whatever the camp was called, the Foodiness Fighters Medal of Honor, or what I call the Golden Uncrustable. Now, the Golden Uncrustable is an award that I invented back in episode 39 called Choosy Moms Don't Choose Jif to honor the pre-made frozen peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that are now available in all of America's finest supermarkets. So whatever your name was, camp chef at the Jewish camp in the woods, we present you the Golden Uncrustable Foodiness Fighters Medal of Honor. Because that camp chef was using up actual leftovers to make actual real food. He made cake-flavored cake, but out of real cake. All he did was convert the cake from one form, pink and white frosted layer cake, minus the ballerina, to another, chocolate-filled babka. Alchemy. Brilliant, pure, chemical alchemy. Impressive, no doubt. Almost biblical. Wine into water kind of stuff. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with more Let's Get Real.
You're listening to Leaving by Dead Stars on heritageradionetwork.org.
The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. So in the end of the year cleaning out of the Foodiness Fallout Shelter fridge and cabinets, I found a few other leftovers that I need to use up or throw away or repurpose. And since I won't throw anything away unless I really, really have to, like my crappy old one-armed IKEA desk chair that even the Goodwill wouldn't take, so I just left it by the garbage on the side of the street. I really want to use this stuff up. So here goes. Now, the number one most important leftover I have for you is from just last week. It's still fresh. On my episode last week on waffles, pancakes, and syrup called If IHOP Gets Lower Than Jelly Donut Pancakes, I'll Drink a Bottle of Waffle-Flavored Vodka. In that episode, I included my obligatory childhood story and my report on the latest foodiness horrors, but then I skipped over some important stuff because I needed to speed things up a bit as I had a guest on, Eric Rochow of Garden Fork TV, talking about making real maple syrup, and we needed to get to his segment and make sure we had enough time for him. So I flew through something really important that I really want to now revisit. Now, it's nothing new for this show. You know the topic and the theme well. But that's why you come back every week, right? I mean, if the Car Talk guys started talking about knitting, you'd stop listening. Or if This American Life started running happy, upbeat, inspirational tales of success, you'd stop writing that check to NPR every year. Oh, which reminds me, have you sent your check to Heritage Radio Network yet? This year, you know we are member supported, and it's membership drive time. And unlike PBS, we don't play hours and hours and hours of Celtic Woman to torture you. So what I really want to revisit is the concept of flavoring. I know. I can hear all of your eyes rolling back in your heads. The collective groaning as you think, again? Leave it alone already. Well, I'm sorry, but I can't do that because I'm not done yet. Because since last week's episode, I've been thinking about IHOP and the flavored pancakes on offer there currently. And the story of the Jewish camp chef came back to me. And while I'm a little grossed out by his cake-flavored cake baking gymnastic feats, I'm kind of really impressed by his thriftiness. He really did make cake-flavored cake, unlike IHOP, which makes cake-flavored pancakes, but only by means of artificial and chemical additions. So I mentioned in last week's show, but very briefly, that IHOP is now serving a bunch of new pancake flavors. Since now, I guess you can't eat anything in its just basic flavor, like pancake-flavored pancakes anymore, or hummus-flavored hummus, or plain yogurt. Now your pancakes have to be not just flavored, but themed. Yes, themed. Like a theme park. Flavoring implies just a drop of an extract or a chemical added, like vanilla extract or octopus extract. But no, these new creations have to have sticky, syrupy toppings and a matching syrupy drizzle and whipped cream. Of course, whipped cream. It's just not breakfast without whipped cream or insulin. So your pancakes aren't just pumpkin pie flavored. They're pumpkin pie themed. Or jelly donut themed, with a little swirly blob of red flavored jelly swirled on top, or the best one of all, the one that makes me think we are truly, truly now living in hell, the red velvet themed pancake experience and amusement park ride. And that, my dear listeners, is the final straw for me, the red velvet pancakes. Because as you've heard me ask before, WTF is red velvet. I know, it's a traditional southern cake made with some cocoa but not chocolatey and anywhere from a drop to a gallon of toxic red food dye and has white icing. But then what is it? It's not a white cake or a yellow cake or even a chocolate cake. It's just a red dyed cake of indeterminate flavor with a white icing that maybe has got cream cheese in it or maybe doesn't. It's the total and complete non-specific yet utterly ubiquitous food flavor, and it's everywhere, including red velvet-themed pancakes at IHOP. Now, if we were back at summer camp and some Southern Jewish princess had had her birthday during camp and her parents had sent a red velvet cake, which would have never happened because it's way too goyish for my people, but let's just pretend here. And there was leftover cake the next morning, and the camp chef said, "Hey, I have a great idea." And he put that leftover cake into the blender and added some more flour and eggs and milk and baking powder, pureed it, and then poured that mixture onto a hot griddle and served it up to us hungry campers. Then we'd have red velvet pancakes. From one real thing to another real thing. Not from one chemically derived corporate groupthink decided upon synthetic flavor profile to another neutrally flavored blank canvas thing. Do they even make pancake flavored pancakes anymore? And another thing, and maybe the final foodiness straw, I can't even discuss this one without my blood pressure rising, is the red freaking velvet latte at Dunkin' Donuts. So whereas red velvet pancakes are at least similar in substrate, in actual tangible form, a cake in some form, a flour-based creation, this is a cake in drink form. It's a cake drink, drinkable cake, a cake-flavored drink. As I mentioned in the birthday-flavored food episode a few weeks ago, the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf chain already has a birthday cake-flavored ice-blended drink, but Dunkin' Donuts is the first to do a cake-flavored latte. All I can imagine in drinking the ice-blended birthday cake drink is congealed frosting, leaving streaks on the inside of the cup and coating my mouth in a cold blue film, and crumbs getting stuck in my throat. Now, of course, there's no real cake in it. It's a drink. It's made with birthday flavoring. The Dunkin' Donuts Red Velvet Latte is made with their red velvet-flavored swirl syrup, which, according to their website, is made of sweetened condensed milk, sugar, corn syrup, artificial and natural flavorings, potassium sorbate, which is a preservative, and, of course, red number 40 and blue number 1, all drizzled over a sweetened coffee drink with a lot of hot milk and the ubiquitous whipped cream. Always the whipped cream. Because that's where the red velvet swirl syrup has to sit, on the whipped cream. It's really enough to drive you to drink, starting at breakfast, which you now can. Not that anyone hasn't before. I mean, breakfast cocktails, anyone? Or brunch cocktails? No, not a Bloody Mary or a mimosa or anything respectably adult like that. I mean actual breakfast cocktails, flavored like breakfast items. Now, I also mentioned these very quickly last week, but I wanted to make sure you really, really get it. And repetition is how I work through all of my rage. So to end the year, we have an update from the Foodiness Beverage Flavoring Institute, which is the research arm of the re-education camp and is funded completely by the liquor industry. And just to make sure everybody heard me last week, the Foodiness Beverage Flavoring Institute now proudly presents breakfast vodka. Just in case the night before you didn't get your fill of infantilized vodka flavors like cotton candy and gummy bear and sweet tea, you can now wake up to a full bar lineup of breakfast flavored vodka, including waffle flavored vodka, Pop-Tart flavored vodka, smoked salmon flavored vodka, maple bacon flavor, and blueberry pancake flavor. Fill up those big sippy cups and let's go down to the pool. We don't even have to eat breakfast anymore. You can skip right over the buffet, fill up your cup, and be drunk by 9 a.m. And mommy can take her breakfast to go now that the vodka tastes and smells like pancakes. Wink, wink, and no one at Pilates will have a clue that she's wasted by 10 a.m. So, I can see it. It's clear. I can now see to the back, the empty back of the fridge here in the Foodiness Fallout Shelter. It's all cleaned out of the leftovers, and it's been scrubbed clean by Francisca, my cleaning lady, who doesn't really do very much, but I have too much liberal guilt to fire her. The Foodiness Fallout Shelter fridge is all ready to be filled up with real food and foodiness goodies for next year so we can start a whole new round of shows. And I'm glad I finally got to use up all that old kimchi that a student gave me 7 years ago as a gift. And I'm happy to not have 4 different open jars of Dijon mustard. And I'm glad to have gotten rid of all of my rage about the flavored vodka and the cake-flavored pancakes. A purge is good once in a while. They clean you out. They make you feel lighter, emptier, like a juice cleanse. Or a vodka cleanse. That gives me an idea. In the meantime, if you don't want to drink or eat shit-flavored shit, keep on listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Thanks to Evan in the control room tonight. Thanks to Chris Nutter, my co-producer. Thanks to Ben Kaplan, who wrote my amazing theme music. And remember, Heritage Radio Network is member-supported. We're like PBS, but so much cooler. So you need to go to the website, heritageradionetwork.org, click on that button, join us, and send us a big fat check, because we need it to keep shows like this on the air. And also remember that if you're a fan of this show, you can find me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. You can also find the show on Facebook, and you can listen to all of our Heritage Radio Network shows on iTunes or on heritageradionetwork.org. We are just about out of time. Thanks for listening. I'm going to go have some waffle vodka now. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.